This is seven. This is entitled Counseling Especially Troubled Youth. In this lesson, we'll take a look at the teenager who is a particular problem either to his parents or to someone else. And we'll talk about how we can counsel them, especially if they don't want to be counseled, which gets pretty tricky. There may be a difference between a 12-year-old who's acting out and causing a lot of trouble in his life versus a 16-year-old who is acting out, but it's relatively new. For the 16-year-old, he or she may just be going through a little trouble spot, a short little phase, and it's probably not as serious. The 12-year-old in this case may really have a deep-rooted problem. And the best way, again, to deal with these are not to overreact, not to make the 16-year-old feel like he or she is in great peril if they're not, but simply deal very rationally with it. But also remember that the 12-year-old who's acting out probably has some very deep-rooted problems, and it'll take more skill in some ways to dig those out and to get parents involved. But again, we don't want to overreact, but simply be very real and show real concern with them. When we deal with the particularly problem teen, often by the time they get to you, they've really caused some damage in their school or in their home or both, and usually both. The troubled teen might be someone who is very depressed and unresponsive. Might be somebody who's very aggressive and hostile. It just depends on the situation. We have to remember when we're thinking about who these people are that are living on the edge, that someone who's being a lot of trouble and really acting out in an aggressive way may be simply being consistent with their fallenness as a sinner. And we, in some ways, we need to and can respect that. The compliant teenager, the one who doesn't say much but seems depressed all the time, may be acting out of fear, or there may be something else desperately wrong. Sometimes the compliant person does not receive the help they need because they just don't get the attention that the really troubled person is. I know when I used to work in youth evangelism, sometimes the high school student that would sit in the back of the room and talk and laugh at inappropriate times and just generally cause trouble is the one that would later come to Christ and prove to be a very fine Christian and a great witness for the Lord. Sometimes the people who sit right up front and seem to be the most attentive are those who don't really take root in the Christian life. And so we can't, while we might always want the person who'll be attentive and even enjoy working with those people more, that's not necessarily the person who's going to be helped the most. You know, people hear what they want to hear, and they listen when they want to listen. So we don't want to be too quick to judge somebody based on their aggression or hostility or on their compliance. We need to take each case as it comes to us and delve into each case as the individual that they are. When we look at the problem person, we want to look at a couple of different problems or a couple of different sources of the problem. The problems could be physiological. I certainly will not try to take the place of a physician here, since I'm not qualified, but I will offer some insights that have been passed on to me by physicians and that I have experienced in working with people as a counselor. One is hormonal. We must remember at this time in their lives, depending on where they are in the adolescent cycle, that their bodies are changing rapidly. They're unsure of themselves, they're unsure of their bodies. but their hormones are just often very, very active and can throw them into great mood swings. And sometimes a mood swing can look like a whole way of living because it seems to last so long. Again, we don't want to overreact, but we want to get them checked out. If there's any at all indication that that what the person may be struggling with could be medical, please get them in to see their family doctor. Let him know. Be sure that the parents or the teenager lets the family doctor know the kind of problems they're having or the kind of problems people are having with them. Be sure he does all the blood work and all those things so that you can be certain what you're dealing with. Been several times that people have come to me thinking that they had a problem that counseling would solve and then found out that it was a problem really that their medicine, that their medical doctor needed to solve. I remember one woman who was terribly paranoid, and after seeing her a few times, I asked her to go back to her doctor. She had been several times, and asked him to do a complete workup on her, blood workup. So she did that, found out that she had a terrible thyroid problem, and once the thyroid problem was cleared up, her paranoia subsided. So keep those kinds of things in mind. Another young man that I knew would go into fits of rage and start breaking things and throwing things. Well, he found out that he had a blood sugar problem and that this blood sugar problem caused enough irritation that he could, it would help push him over the edge toward rages from time to time. And again, when he began to eat right and have this, the right kind of medical attention, the mood swings and the rages stopped. For young women, it could be, there could be a problem with PMS. Remember, as a teenager, she's just getting used to her cycle and what that means to her and how it affects her, and she may not be used to it. She may overreact when she begins the PMS cycle, and so we want to be very sensitive to that. Sometimes, especially if you're a male, it's hard to talk with the young woman about that. If you do need to talk about that, you might invite her mother to be present at that time and let her mother know what you're talking about, just so she won't feel anything is inappropriate. I've not run into that problem myself yet, except with one young woman who whose mother was present, but she just didn't want to talk about those sorts of things in front of me. So I was able to talk with the mother. Another issue, of course, is drugs, whether alcohol or some other sort of drug that could be working in this person's system, and perhaps they haven't wanted to admit that they were on drugs yet. And again, a blood workup with a drug screening could certainly tell us that. So you have to just have your eyes and ears open and give it every chance to be physiological if it is. Most often you will find that it's not, I think. At least that's my experience. But it very well could be, and it certainly has been several times for me. But secondly, we want to look at psychological concerns for the especially troubled adolescent. When we look at psychological concerns, simply what I mean are things like trauma in their lives. Have they experienced the death of a close friend? Are they working through that grieving process and understanding death? Has there been a breakup in their lives with a significant boyfriend or girlfriend that has sort of thrown them into a tizzy? Have there been other sorts of losses, friends who are no longer friends, or perhaps an injury that threw them out of football or cheerleading or something else that they might be doing? Have their parents been divorced? Often that is the culprit in many cases, what's going on with the parents has traumatized the adolescent, and they're acting out accordingly. Or simply other disappointments in life. Weren't elected to the student council, did not make cheerleader, things that perhaps they'd looked forward to since they were little bitty kids. And then they've grown up and found that they did not have what they always wanted. There's another area to look at as well, and there are many other more psychological concerns that you'll discover. But one other area I wanted to mention is simply the area of not being trained how to handle life. Perhaps they're not being trained because they've had bad modeling by parents. Parents who just have not shown them how to be grown up. Perhaps the father gets mad and goes into a rage or acts out or doesn't respect authority. I've seen many people who have trouble with authority in school, and then we find out that their parents are the type that have a big problem with authority, curse police officers if they get pulled over, even though they're guilty. They are always cursing about or in some way putting down their bosses from work and saying how they don't know anything. Perhaps their parents are the type that are just very critical and have a negative attitude about everything, and then the child picks that up. So it could be the modeling of the parents that has taught them not to react properly to adult situations. It may be absent parents. One or both of the parents are gone much of the time, and so there's not much of a relationship. In some ways, I've had young women tell me that their father was there, but he wasn't there. He came home every night from work, but he didn't really talk to them, didn't have anything to do with them. He would just go off and kind of do his thing in his study, and their mother did all the everything that had to do with the children. And one woman in particular told me that it would have almost been easier if her parents had divorced and her father had moved way far away, because at least then she'd have an excuse. But in this case, he was there, but simply rejected her. And so absent parents, either physically, geographically absent, or physically present, but emotionally absent, can really hurt. You want to be aware of the birth order. You don't want to over-dramatize this, but birth order does seem important. It'll help you understand the family dynamic better. Kevin Lehman's book, the Birth Order book, is a great place to start in understanding how the different order of siblings affects each one. There also may be the problem of their not feeling loved, perhaps because life is too busy, or simply the parents are cold and don't know how to relate to their children. Also, take a look at the rules of the home. Are the rules too harsh? If the rules are too harsh, the children feel unloved. Are the rules too loose? Because if the rules are too loose, then children feel unloved. What we want to do is seek a biblical balance so that there are clear and defined rules that the parents are going to back up, but that they're not so harsh that the young person seems or feels just trapped. I think the hardest situation for any of us in the counseling business is working with someone, in this case, a teenager, who just doesn't want to be there. And I have had parents just drag their children in and basically tell me to fix them. And the young person doesn't want to be there. They're only there because the parents are making them be there. And that's where you really have to call upon the Lord to help give you insight into this child, to find something that you can communicate about. You know, I would just begin to explore, find out what their interests are, see if you have any common interests. Now, don't try to fake anything, but let's say it's a young man and he's particularly interested in cars or painting or music. In my case, my interest in music and my playing guitar has been a link with some young men. Also, things that I have interest in, such as the arts, movies, and sports and all. So you just find something that you can connect with and really spend some time talking about that, so that you can really get to know them, at least in one or two areas. And that'll give them the sense that they are important to you, and it all always must be done with great sincerity, or they'll see right through it. I had one professor who said that when he got an adolescent who simply would not talk, he would say, "Well, I understand your reluctance to talk. I don't think I would want to either if my parents made me come in here. But, you know, they're paying for this session, and so I've got to keep you in here at least till a certain time. So since you don't want to talk, and since your parents are paying me anyway, we need to stay in here, but I'm just going to work on some other stuff that I need to get done. And if you decide you want to talk, then let me know." And so he would pull out some other file or some other work to work on. He'd sit at his desk and start working, and it would just be quiet. Well, he said on a few occasions when he tried that, the young person would begin to get irritated that this guy was making money off his parents but wasn't doing anything for it. And so he would bring that up, and then he would start talking. So you might try that. It may or may not work, depending on the person you're with. But there may be some creative ways that you can get people to talk. I know of one young woman who told her mother before she came that she was not going to say one word to me, and she almost kept that promise. She, all that she said was, when I made a comment about her half brother, all she said, "He's not my brother," but she didn't comment the rest of the hour. And all I could do was talk with the mother. And that young lady was just so embittered and so hurt by the situation she was in, that she was just not going to give her mother the satisfaction of talking to anyone else. I've often wondered what became of that young woman, because she didn't come back. Sometimes you'll lose them because they just don't want to be there. But normally, in my experience is that if you're just very real with them, very open, very natural with them, and just tell them, give them a vision for the kind of thing they can do with you. Talk with them very frankly. Tell them, "I know you don't want to be here. I know your parents are making you be here." And quite honestly, even if you don't want to do anything I say, let's talk and let's find a way that you can get along with your parents long enough to graduate from high school and then be out on your own. And often they will respond to that. So try a number of things. Really think it through. You might even try asking the teenager what he or she would like to do with that time, since you've got to be there anyway. Who knows? They may say, "Well, let's play chess," or let's do something like that. And who knows? That might be an opportunity to talk as you have some attention diverted into something else. So be creative. They do respond to creativity, especially if it's not something they were expecting. It may be better than they expected, or they may feel like you're in some way helping them not exactly do what their parents wanted, but yet nevertheless getting by. And I'm very honest with parents. Sometimes I tell them, "You know, he doesn't want to be here, but he's going to be just to stay out of trouble with you, and I'm just going to see what I can do, and we'll see how it all works out." But let's talk for a moment about just some ways of going about counseling with delinquent teenagers. Dr. Keith Olson mentioned before, from the Family Consultation Service of San Diego, California, has written a book, Counseling Teenagers, The Complete Christian Guide to Understanding and Helping Adolescents. And he quotes Dr. Derek Miller, who gives us five things that we want to be aware of in our counseling of adolescents. And let's go through these five. Number one is, according to Dr. Miller, Counselors need to guard against being manipulated by the counselee into compromising situations. The counselee, for example, may tell the counselor of some recent or anticipated delinquent activity in a manner that tempts the counselor to insist that the activity be stopped. If the counselor is manipulated into a position of collusion, then his or her ability to help has been seriously hampered. We need to know what the people are saying to us, what they mean by it, and we need to maintain our own professional integrity and not go down certain rabbit trails with them. Number two, he says, adolescents sometimes tell counselors partial truths in order to prevent further probing into their aggressive activity. When this tactic succeeds and the counselor accepts what has been revealed as the whole truth, the teenager is likely to feel increased contempt for the counselor and for all adults. The acting out behavior will probably increase. When things just don't seem to add up, we just need to tell them that these things just don't seem to add up. The person you're saying you are and the person your parents are saying you are and your teachers is different. And we need to be very clear with them that we don't think we're getting the whole story if we indeed think we're not. Number three, delinquent adolescents typically communicate more effectively with their actions than with their words. They may wear expensive stolen clothing or jewelry or dress and act in sexually provocative ways in counseling sessions. These messages must be perceived, comprehended, and appropriately responded to in order for the teenager to feel heard and understood. I knew one young man that I worked with who had no money at all, did not have a job, and yet he walked in $100 shoes. What he had done is he had pawned everything he could think of and scraped together every penny he could find and bought these shoes because he thought these shoes would make him acceptable and make him part of the in crowd. This young man also would steal expensive perfume or cologne from department stores that his mother found on a couple of occasions and brought to me. So we were able to confront him directly because we did catch him at a couple of things. And when confronted, of course, you never want to back them into a corner so much that they just simply cannot get out. But you always want to leave them a little breathing room, a little way of escape, so they don't feel completely trapped. Otherwise, you're liable to lose them forever. Number four, counselors need to understand and accept adolescent narcissism and egocentricity. There is no place for prejudice or stereotyping in the counseling relationship. We need to understand that most every adolescent that comes in is self-centered and worships themselves. And in understanding this and accepting this will go a long way toward helping them. Number five, counselors should not fixate on the issue of whether their counselee is telling the truth. All communications are valued as having significance. Whether it is truth or lie, the message carries interpretive meaning. Counselors need to search out these meanings instead of worrying so much about the truth. Now, that may sound like it a little bit contradicts something earlier, but the point is we don't want to be so fixated on them lying to us that we are of no help to them. When we are worried about them lying to us, we're worried about us, and we need to be more worried about them. So we don't need to worry about them pulling the wool over our eyes in a prideful sense, but simply that we do want the truth so we can be most helpful to them. After all, they're in for counseling to help them, not to stroke us in some way. So don't worry about being lied to except to the extent that it affects the counselee. And so you want to let them know that, yeah, they could fool you if they wanted to, and they could tell you all kinds of things, but it doesn't really hurt you. You're still going to get paid. You're still doing what you're hired to do. It just means that they're not going to get any help, and they're going to waste their time. This has been Counseling Especially Troubled Youth.